2 o'clock. Get in, get our business done, and move on. Okay, let's see.
Okay, great, thank you.
Matters under jurisdiction of the board may be addressed by the general public before or during the regular agenda. However, California law prohibits the board from taking action on any matter which is not on the posted agenda unless it is determined an emergency by the Board of Retirement. Any member of the public wishing to address the board during the public comment period shall be permitted to be heard once up to 3 minutes. Please complete a public comment form and give it to the chair. Any person wishing to make a presentation to the board must submit the presentation in written form with copies furnished to all board members. Presentations are limited to 3 minutes. Okay, do we have any presentations, comments, or anything from the floor? Okay. With that, takes us to announcements. Oh, excuse me, roll call, sorry.
Okay, Lynn Betancourt.
Here.
Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Gordon Ford.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Clarence Willman.
Here.
Linda Stotts Burnett.
Here.
All board members are present.
Okay, announcements.
I have a couple announcements today. Mike Fisher's resignation from the Retirement Board was forwarded to the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors, who received it at their Tuesday, November 2nd, 2010 meeting. Also, Kathy Johnson, formerly an accountant with the Stanislaus County Health Services Agency, or HSA, has been hired as the Stanser accountant effective yesterday, Monday, November 22nd. She was unable to be introduced in person at today's Retirement Board meeting because she had already made plans for her time off today, sitting for her fourth CPA exam. The Succession Planning Committee will be meeting after the board meeting today. The committee members are Maria DeAnda, Ron Martin, Mike Lynch, and Darren Garrett.
Do we have any idea when the replacement for Mike is going to be, or we haven't?
Up to the Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments? Excuse me, announcements. I just will say, excuse me, I do have my BlackBerry today. I'm the only manager on call. For my staff at CSA, so I might be in demand, but then again, I might not be. So, anyway, sorry about that. So, I apologize ahead of time. So, public comment. Consent items?
Make a motion to approve the consent items as noted on the agenda.
I have a question before we, on consent item 5E, on the disability retirement. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, and Michelle's here to, I was just having a problem with this after I read over it, because the individual, we have a doctor that's saying that, oh, let's do that in closed session. Sorry about
that.
I think
so.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll take it offline.
Okay.
Take it as a separate item under closed session to
okay.
discuss this.
Sorry about that.
Okay. So minus number E. Do we still want to have the motion?
Correct.
Okay. And we have
second
a second.
The motion.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So moved.
Abstain.
Okay. SIS report.
Yes, thanks.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. And we have a pretty good report for you for September, and then on the quarterly September and the month of October. And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly, given the time constraints. On the quarterly, page one, on the capital market review, I'll just remind everyone that kind of the financial markets have gone through kind of four distinct periods recently, with the financial crisis deepening in the fall of 2008 and continuing to march 8th or 9th, 2009, when the equity markets bottomed. And then we had a big recovery in the equity markets and the credit markets. And it was kind of a recovery that was pricing in a typical recovery out of recession, which equates to 5 to 6% GDP. In April and May of this year, 2010, fears from economic statistics being released that were weaker than a typical 5 to 6% GDP recovery, and then the talk of double dip recession or more appropriately, the markets were kind of embracing the new normal that PIMCO has championed, where GDP would be 1 to 2 to 3% instead of the 5 to 6%, which is typical of the recovery. The markets corrected, and we had months of strong up months followed by poor down months until the end of August of this summer, when Chairman Bernanke from the Fed appeared at Jackson Hole and signaled to the markets that QE2 was going to begin the day after Election Day. And it did begin the day after Election Day with signaling of $600 billion of purchases of treasuries. And as you know, the financial markets once again rallied strongly in September and October, specifically September. What remains to be seen is what's good for the financial markets from quantitative easing. Will it be good for the economy, getting us, you know, unemployment has been stubbornly high at around 10%. And the Fed, frankly, besides this quantitative easing, can't lower interest rates any further, obviously, with rates close to zero on the short term. Page 2, 3 are the summary for the quarter. The composite returned 9.3%, ranked a good 29th percentile for the quarter, very much in line with its policy index of 9.4%. You see 10 things listed on what helped. Frankly, a lot of these 10 were pretty much break evens. The index funds 1 and 2, as Loomis was terminating, we had the Russell 1000 Growth Index Fund and the 1000 Value Index Fund all performed in line with the benchmarks. Dodge and Cox performed pretty much in line with its benchmark, up 10 basis points, as did Pyramus at even. Dodge and Cox Fixed Income also performed just 10 basis points above its benchmark. What really helped was Delaware, which had been kind of struggling a little bit, right at about 0% for 3 years on a relative basis to their benchmark, had a very good quarter, up 210 basis points. And Capital Prospects had a very good quarter, up 170 basis points. PIMCO, from the start, has been out of the gate really good for us. It was 90 basis points for the quarter, and they're up more than that since they were hired right before the quarter started. And Invesco Realty had a very strong quarter, up 18.9 versus 18.4, ranked in the fourth percentile. What hurt were just two. Legato Small Cap Growth was down 260 basis points. In the very strong up market, they could not keep pace. They did have a very good October, though, and since inception, they are positive versus the benchmark. And LSV, our value non-U.S. equity manager, was down 140 for the quarter. In a quarter, generally, their style being a deep value manager in a strong, strong up market will trail. And plus, the growth has decidedly outperformed value on a global basis, which is another win in their face instead of in the, against their back. Page 4.
I just have one question on 3. The Invesco fund here, it says it's ranked in the fourth percentile.
For the
is
quarter.
That like, what is the worst? Is one percentile?
No, one's the best.
One's the best.
And 100's the worst. So they outperformed.
So it's really gotten a lot better.
It's gone a lot, exactly right. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's gone a lot better in a very strong up market, which, as from our due diligence on site, they tend to, if they can match a very strong up market, they're generally happy, and they've been surpassing that, so that's good also.
Well, they were doing okay with their benchmark, but the benchmark sucked, that's all.
Hey, Paul, I have a question. We have a black mark, or BlackRock, as a positive factor, because it met its benchmark, but it's in the 65th percentile. And then we have Legato as a negative factor, because it's in the 69th percentile. But there's not much difference.
Well, it depends on the sub-asset class they're in, but it is, yeah, the value index, you know, on number 0.4, it slightly outperformed its benchmark. The ranking you would expect over time to be in the 50th to 75th range for the benchmark. And then for Legato, small cap growth benchmark's been quite highly ranked these past 2 or 3 years. So despite underperforming the benchmark by 260, their ranking is similar to what the passive benchmark is in large cap value, just because active managers have performed poorly in small cap growth. So they're different peer universes which they're ranked against.
Right, and that's my question. If they're the in the what amounts to the bottom third of their peer universe, that strikes me as not being good.
That is correct.
Okay, and we have this as a positive factor. Now, I just
what they're ranked positive on is alpha on alpha, not peer universe rankings.
They beat the benchmark.
I know they beat the benchmark, but
right. That's how the
so
system ranks.
So it's a mixed return, basically. It's
well, you got to look at both, but
yeah.
The way these are ordered, positive is if you match or beat your benchmark. Negative is if
okay.
you underperform your benchmark. That's just how they're stacked.
Okay, but a better peer review on number four.
And you'll see that. You'll see that later.
They would have beat the benchmark by more.
Right, and you'll see that later in the book. There's
okay.
more in-depth look at the peer universe. Pages 4 and 5, the account was at $1.28 billion at the end of September. You see the breakdowns between asset classes and managers. And pages 6 and 7 give the rankings for the quarter and longer periods. And you see the fund for 1 year and 2 years has done well on a ranking and an alpha basis, especially the 2 year number. As you recall, though, prior to the recovery in the markets, the rankings were quite poor, down in the last two deciles, and the alpha was quite poor also. So these good 2 years has kind of reversed that, because when you look at 3 and 5 years, we're now total fund at policy index and rankings slightly above median now at 41st and 47th percentile. Under U.S. equity managers, Mellon, BlackRock for large growth and BlackRock large value are all passive. Delaware, the one active manager in large growth, as I said, had a good quarter on a ranking and beating the benchmark by 200 basis points net. And you can see the rankings for 1 and 2 years have now picked up significantly. As we said in the past, this is a very concentrated manager that you would expect a lumpy set of returns. This time, the lumpiness is in our favor. Dodge & Cox, the large value manager, had a decent quarter. As we go over the monthlies, you know, on strong up months, they outperform, they tend to, and strong down months, they underperform. You see the 1 and 2 year numbers are, the 1 year is below benchmark, and the 2 year is above benchmark, and the 3 and 5 year numbers are right at kind of matching the benchmark with ranking 62nd and 70th percentile. That's a manager that has a very good 10-year number, but the 5-year number is just adequate and bears watching, because at some point, if they're not adding value in the future, we always have the option of moving their assets into the already existing Russell 1000 value passive index. Small cap managers are both emerging manager programs. Legato had a weak quarter, 69th percentile. 1 year number is 14 versus 14.8. Since inception, which is really 1 year and 3 quarters, they are above the benchmark since they were hired. They had a very good October too. And Capital Prospects had a very good quarter, where in the past they were kind of lagging very strong up markets. They surpassed this quarter, which is good news, and a very good 1 year number. You see the U.S. equity composite as a whole for 1 year has been right on line with our 80-20 benchmark. 2 years, 40 basis points over. It's been improving. The alpha for 3 and 5 years is poor, though, given this very weak 2007-2008 period. There's been a reversal the last couple of years, but still a ways to go. And that includes some legacy managers that aren't on here anymore. Loomis would be one. International has done well also. It's been a very hard benchmark to beat. You see the rankings for the Aquiex US for the quarter, 36, 1 and 2 years, 37, 35th. LSV was behind the benchmark for the quarter, Pyramus in line, and the one-year number, Pyramus has been above benchmark and LSV below, and combined, they're 9% versus 8, which is a very good result. And as one would suspect, Pyramus has been outperforming LSV in this period because their growth style has been in favor more. The two-year number is also very good for the composite, 8.4 versus 7.2. So that active combination of growth, Pyramus, and value LSV combined versus the benchmark for the last couple of years has been working adequately. Fixed income, Dodge and Cox, fixed income, their 1 year number is 150 over the benchmark on a gross basis, and their longer term numbers are providing alpha of 100 basis points approximately, and rankings right around the top quartile. And PIMCO, as I said, has started very well, up 3.4 versus 2.5 with a ranking of 25th percentile for the quarter. And their alpha is even a little bit more since they were hired. So combined, the benchmark with the two managers in the short term is slightly above benchmark, and longer term, which is mainly the record of Dodge and Cox, is also good. Invesco for the quarter, 18.9 versus 18.4, a high ranking of fourth percentile. And the two-year number is now positive, 3.7 on a gross versus 3.0. with a ranking of 11th percentile. So they have turned performance around. Page 8, the only thing I'll go to is the 10-year number, which we didn't have on the prior pages, which is quite strong, despite the poor period from 2006, 2007, and 2008, and the better period of 2009 and 2010, which gives the 5-year number 3.7 versus 3.7. The first 5 years of the last decade were so good that the 10-year number is 180 above benchmark at 5.8 versus 3.6 in a ranking of third percentile. I'm going to skip some pages here in the interest of time. You can always interrupt me and go back to them. Page 14 is Delaware, 15.1 versus 13. And you can see the 1 and 2 year numbers are now showing very good alpha, with the 3 year number relatively flat versus the benchmark. But a good recent quarter has helped the 1 and 2 year numbers. And then Dodge and Cox Equity, you see the 2, 3, and 5 year numbers. The 2 year number very good. The 3 and 5 right in line with the benchmark, or slightly above, with rankings of 62nd and 70th, yet their 10-year number of 6.3 versus 2.6 is fantastic, with a ranking of 13th. So they had a tremendous 2000 to 2005 period when the market came out of that tech bubble. And unlike the financial crisis where everything broke down, in that period out of the tech bubble, there were some sectors that did very, very well. And they, being a value managers, were in the right sectors. Legato, page 16, you see the 1 year number 14 versus 14.8. They don't have 2 years of performance yet. We should see that in the next quarter. And Cap Prospects on page 17, the very good 1 year number, with both emerging managers positive since inception. Page 18, the S&P 500, you see a dividend yield of 2%, earnings growth 5.18 only, and the top two names in the 500 U.S. stocks are ExxonMobil and Apple. Page 21, Russell 1000 Growth Index Fund, you see a much higher return on equity and earnings growth in the growth sector than the S&P 500 sector. And then on page 24 and 25, Delaware, 27 stocks, you see a very healthy earnings growth of 18.8 for Delaware versus the market, the 1,000 growth we talked about, 11.8. And they had on page 25 their attribution report for the quarter, very strong stock selection of 2.74%, including the three main areas of growth, consumer, healthcare, and technology. Page 27 is the Russell 1000 Value Index. Managed by BlackRock, you see the earnings growth on the value side is actually slightly negative. And then on page 31 is Dodge and Cox, looking at their summary a little more. Dividend yield 1.9, and you see a return of equity of 10.4 and earnings growth similar to the Russell 1000 value. 10 largest names, their largest name is Hewlett Packard. They announced earnings last night and the market was sharply off today, but that stock was up, so at least for one day they look good. And for the quarter, they looked good also through September, adding 72 basis points, although allocation was the main attribution. The underweight financials was the biggest additive to their quarter report. Legato, page 33, PE ratio of 25, earnings growth of 12.7. They have 5 or 6 underlying managers. And in these strong up markets, a couple of those managers in particular didn't keep up. Although, as I said, October was a good month, and since inception, they are still positive. But you see on page 34, their attribution, stock selection minus 235, offset somewhat by allocation effects of positive 88. So they're down 1.5% for the quarter in total. And Capital Process looks good on pages 36 and 37, with equally value added on 37 from allocation and stock selection from their underlying 6 managers for outperformance of 1.8%. Quickly on the international equity managers on 39, you see LSV and Pyramus versus the MSCI ACWI ex-US. As we said before, for the 2-year period, especially 9.1 for LSV, 7.5 for Pyramus, and combined 8.4 versus 7.2 is a very good result in a universe where the benchmark has done very, very well and has reversed some of the prior year's effects. I'm going to skip the fixed income, which is on page 50. The yield curve at the bottom of page 50, the purple line on the bottom is where we're at the end of September. And you see the 10-year, you go to 10 years maturity, that equates to about a 2.5% yield at the end of September. And you see how steep the line is from 0 years, where it's essentially 0% going up there. That's the steepness of the yield curve that's talked about often. And then going out to 30 years, you can see it flattens out a bit. And the major issue, I think, facing the markets going forward and the pension funds' asset allocation to fixed income is that, given where yields are today, historically low to begin with, and we'll show that in a second, and the potential for interest rates to move up, that over the next 3 years, the most likely range of returns for a Barclays Capital Aggregate Index is kind of 0, 1, 2, 3%. And that's an issue that's facing us because we have a fairly healthy allocation of fixed income. That's just something to keep in mind. And I realize the fixed income allocation is a great diversifier to equities, and it is. And I'm not arguing any substantial change in that, but on the margin we might look to add incremental return to our fixed income allocation, and I think there's, you know, ways we can go about doing that just from a discussion standpoint. Page 51, the
You're saying we should increase fixed income?
Excuse me?
You're saying we should decrease fixed income?
No, not necessarily. What I'm saying is there might be ways with starting with our one of the existing managers, PIMCO, to broaden their mandate, to broaden their opportunity set to add return to the portfolio.
Okay.
And recall, they're only like 6-7% of the total fund, right? You see the returns. I'm not going to go over those again. What I like to highlight on page 52, Dodge and Cox, treasury allocation 4.7% versus 34% for the index. The treasury weight of the index keeps getting bigger and bigger. Why? Because the U.S. government keeps issuing more and more debt. And Dodge & Cox, as we know, favors the spread products, especially the corporates and the mortgages, and you can see 85% of their portfolio are in those two sectors. And that's where they get the yield advantage on page 53 of 3.9% versus 2.4%. The duration, you see 5.3 years versus 4.7 for the aggregate. PIMCO is a good complement to Dodge & Cox on pages 54 and 55. They have a treasury allocation of 45%. Corporates and mortgages are at around 45%. And their duration is 5.8 years versus 4.7. Look at the yield on the aggregate on 55 on the top left box, 2.4%.
What is Yankee mean?
Yankees are Yankees are foreign bonds denominated in US dollars. So investment grade foreign bonds. With that, that's the quarterly report. I'll stop and take any questions before transitioning into the monthly for October. Oh, excuse me, we gotta do the manager review list first, which will be fairly quick also. The manager review list just takes the each of the managers and looks at their alpha and peer universe rankings. And a lot of these managers have below 3 years history, especially the index funds. But the index funds don't really matter that much because they should be returning what the index returns. Dodge & Cox, large cap value on the top line. Annualized alpha for 3 years minus 40, 5 years flat. You see the peer universe ranking 62 and 70th percentile. It's not where we want to be with them. They had a positive quarter that just concluded. And they're kind of right on the edge. My recommendation is to keep them in good standing while keeping a close watch on their short-term performance. But any further slippage, my inclination would be to put them back on under review status. Delaware, 3 year alpha minus 20, peer universe ranking 54th, fairly medium type, with a good shorter term performance for 1 and 2 years. Our recommendation is to keep them in good standing also. And then Mellon, the S&P 500 benchmark is slightly ahead on alpha 3 and 5 years of 10 basis points. The two international equity managers, LSV is minus 50 and minus 30 for 3 and 5 years. Pyramus plus 10 for 3 years. The rankings are all pretty much at or slightly above median because the benchmark's been, as we went over the quarterly, has been a very good performer. LSV, I would recommend keeping them on good standing, just because their deep value style has held up, you know, pretty darn well in a decidedly growth style market, and their rankings are, especially for 5 years, above median. And then Invesco, we saw the quarterly where their 2 year number is now above benchmark, and the rankings continue to be quite high. With the turnaround in performance, our look at them is strictly how they're performing against the benchmark and the rankings. And for that, we would recommend changing from under review status to place them in good standing. On fixed income, Dodge & Cox has performed well there, and PIMCO has a very limited but good performance history with us. So the one change is placing Invesco from under review to good standing. This is strictly looking at them as a manager in their peer universe and their benchmark, not a analysis of the beta of their benchmark.
Paul, we were going to move additional funds over there.
Yeah, well, I'm in communication with them and talking with them for them to indicate when they feel is a good time to do that. Obviously, with the beta of their asset class being so strong this past year. I think it's up 30% from 1 year to September. They rather see a correction first before we move funds.
Okay. Well, I'd make a motion that we move them to a good standing.
I'd second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Can you state the motion again, Vic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we move them to
Invesco to good standing.
Good.
Okay, I just couldn't hear it.
I need the motion.
And we move Invesco.
How do we stand to our, against our original investment at this stage?
We're clawing backward, and we're in October they were at 18.1 million, and we gave them 20 to start with.
And we're almost at par.
So we're down about 2 million so far, is all.
We're about down 19%. Yeah. But as we said, that's the asset class, not them on a relative basis.
At 18, we gave them 20, right?
Yeah.
Down 9%.
Yeah, 9 to 10%.
Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Pose?
I'll abstain.
Okay, so next we have a monthly performance review.
Well, I have a question for Paul.
Yes.
Yeah, the, I think we've, I've asked this before and I might not have understood.
Sure.
But Invesco, last quarter, they were in the fourth
yes.
percentile, which is excellent. But as I, what is the rule of thumb when you're looking at peer review of these investment managers? I mean, should we be looking for someone who's in the top quarter over 3 years, or should it be, and one investment guy told me we should do a quarter
yeah.
by quarter, and if they're not in the top third, two quarters in a row, you should put them on notice. So what is the rule of thumb?
I wish there was one. I would, but it,
these guys are all like in the bottom half, except Dodge and Cox and Pyramus.
Well, no,
over the 3 years.
Well, I would distinguish the bottom half from quartiles. I mean, if you're in the third quartile, these are so much very point in time also that it can change quickly. But if you're consistently, you know, falling below median, the goal is to be in the top, you know, around the 40th percentile or better on a consistent basis on a rolling 3 and 5 years. So that's why I think.
So that's the rule of thumb, is the rolling 3 and 5.
That's why these charts
okay.
are important. Yeah,
okay.
That's kind of. So if you're below median for a fairly long time on a rolling 3 year basis, and your trend continues to be below median or downward, that would be probably a time to put someone on watch, or they, you know.
You have to remember, why did you hire them in the first place?
Right.
And if part of your review process indicates that they're falling out of the rationale why you hired them in the first place, then yeah, you have a problem.
But you also have to take, like LSV is a good example. And we'll show this in here, especially in the U.S. markets. You look at the last 3 years, growth is just absolutely
right.
trounced value.
Right.
And we know they're a deep value manager, so you would expect, given the how pronounced that differential has been and how long it's been going on, that they're going to have more trouble performing against a core benchmark than a pure growth manager.
Right.
So you also have to look at things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, October was another good month for the equity markets. The Russell 3000 was up 3.9%, and for the year-to-date up just below 9%, and 1 year up 18.3%. Small caps have continued to outperform, up 4.1% for the month, and up 13.6% year-to-date and 26.6% for the one-year number. For the month, growth beat value once again, and the large cap 1000, 4.8% versus 3% for the month, and then for the one-year number, 19.6 versus 15.7. It's almost a 4% differential for the 1 year. And you go out 3 years, it's about 450 basis points growth beating value. And in small cap for the 1 year number, 2000 growth up 15 versus 12 for the 2000 value. Non-US stocks were slightly below the US market for the month. The Acquiex US up 13.4, and for the year, 1 year, 13.1, below the 18.3 for the Russell 3. Emerging markets up 2.9 for the month and a strong 23.9 for the 1 year. And for fixed income, the aggregate was up 0.36% for the month, the 1 year number, and year to date, slightly above 8%, I think, are numbers that are going to be, will be challenged to see going forward. And spreads continue to narrow with the high yield bonds up strong. Next page one. The market value increased from the end of September, that $1.28 billion to $1.31 billion, with asset classes, percentages versus targets and managers in line. Page two, added $34 million from the prior month, which is a good figure, and $148 million from the prior year, which is a good figure.
And that's all net.
That's net.
Correct.
Right, exactly. And then
that's net after we paid out.
Yep.
Yeah, if you paid out the monthlies, yeah. And then on page three, you see the breakdown by managers versus targets. And page four, the cash levels. The cash level for the equity managers have gotten very, very low, in fact, and, which is good. In rising strong markets, you don't want much cash to drag. Page five gives the performance for the fund for the month of October. As I said, Dodge & Cox continues their good outperformance in strong up markets, adding 120 basis points. And for the 4 months to October fiscal year to date, up 200 basis points. Delaware was slightly below their benchmark for the month of October. They've added 160 basis points. And then Capital Prospects was in line with their benchmark, has added 150. And as I said, Legato had a nice month in October, which was good to see, adding about 1%. Yet they're still down 1.68% for the 4 months. For the month of October, equities added 30 basis points. And fiscal year to date, the 4 months up 115 basis points. Fixed income was another good month for the both the managers from an active basis, adding 30 and 20 basis points, Dodge & Cox and PIMCO respectively. And for the 4 months, Dodge & Cox is up 67 and PIMCO a very good 1.39%. And you see the total fixed income is up 80 basis points for the 4 months. International, another good story. Both managers adding about 45 basis points for the month, following a good September. And now for the 4 months, LSV is down 87 and Pyramus up 16. So overall, total international equity up a very strong 20.28% for the 4 months, although trailing their benchmark slightly. And Invesco trailed by 20 basis points, and for the 4 months, a good 23.5, pretty much keeping up with the benchmark of 23.77. So the fund for the month of October added 37 basis points, 2.88 versus 2.5. And then for the 4 months, 12.45 versus 12.12, up 33 basis points. Although the 12.45 obviously is a great start to the fiscal year 2011. On the rolling 3 year basis, Dodge & Cox, Mike, this is a good chart on, it's from the top all the trending. I mean, you don't even have to be down below zero if you're trending down like that. Part of that,
that's,
you can say, is reversion to the mean, but it gets worrisome. The good news is that they seemed to bottom out December 08, had that good year, kind of came back down, and now we're trending back up, but they're doing it in up markets. That's what concerns me the most, is that they seem to be just outperforming in up markets and underperforming in down markets, and you rather see a little, a little better performance in both markets.
Didn't they have a large check staff change in 2003, 2004?
Well, they had a couple of major retirements.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we wonder with the new CIO there, we suspect he has a more riskier type of style
yeah.
than Harry Hagee did, and Port Shapiro, who used to be on this account for us. John Gunn's now the new CIO, and it appears that things have changed since he became CIO. So that's a great comment. Pyramus on page 7, it's kind of, Pyramus has been kind of trending right at 0% for only 3 years for a while now. Again, we realize the benchmark's been hard to beat, so we recognize that, but we'd like to see them break out on the upside also. But no real concern yet, but it's something we're watching. LSV has been actually trending up since February 2009. It's a couple steps up, one down, with a couple more up, and now they're above zero through October on a 3-year basis. And Delaware, made a nice move up and move down, and they're right around 0%, and Dodge & Cox fixed income looks very good on their rolling 3-year basis. So it was another good month in October. November's gotten a little choppy in the markets, but we've had such a huge run-up since the end of August that, a little correction is not surprising. I'll take any questions on the monthly. Investment policy. We've come back to make some changes on the statement of investment policy. And I'll go over those real quickly. I think one of the main changes was adding a corporate fraudulent behavior notification guidelines I think the discussions that Gordon started, and a couple of recent examples of stocks in our manager portfolios. I think this is a good addition. But quickly, I'm going to start on the first correction is just a minor one on page 3, statement objectives, the point 4 return, we just went down to 8% from 8.16% to match the recent change by the actuary. Page 4, we kind of worked around this where the special situation fund's now 1.5%, so we have the targets based on that. But we also recognize that the fund could go up to 9% based on the recent asset allocation. So we also put in, if the fund got funded up to 9%, what the targets would look like in the other asset classes. And we will prorate these asset classes if and when we add to the special situation fund. And we have we've done in the past a kind of blueprint on how that works. Go to page 10. We just changed the language on the two emerging manager programs in U.S. small cap to make it a little more understandable. No, that's just wording, no changes there. And the bottom of page 14 is the corporate fraudulent behavior notification guidelines. This makes it clear to the investment managers that if they hold a BP situation in the future, that the second paragraph would apply to them. And if they hold a Satam computer, for example, out of India, like LSV had, the first paragraph would apply, where they would have to contact us immediately, informing us that they hold that stock, give us particulars on amount of shares held, date of purchase, and other market data, and then a summary on why the company was purchased and going forward, what the rationale is for either keeping it or an exit plan out of it.
Paul, with the special situation fund being increased, does the paragraph above make sense?
On page 14, Gordon?
Yeah, the one that's deviation from investment policy. So where I have a special situation fund that can have a certain percentage that is special situations, but we're also saying we may deviate. I'm just wondering if that was there before we kind of looked at the special situation.
I think that paragraph allows, if that just allows managers who feel that the guidelines are holding them back or aren't appropriate to them to notify us on why that's the case.
And we have a
that would also apply to special situations managers also, though.
Does that have a process or something on it somewhere?
I think that the onus is just on the manager.
To come with a suggestion.
If, for example, if they want to hold below investment grade something, they have to, they can't go out and purchase that. They have to notify saying, we wish that we make a case for this and either you approve it or disapprove it.
The decision making still belongs to the board.
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
If
they can recommend to us and we say yes or no.
Right.
With that said, Gordon, if the board decided to move forward in a special situations investment that is different from the investment guidelines, we would have to either say no or change the investment guidelines.
Right.
And then the last change is similar to the prior change on the targets in Supplemental C, page 19 and 20, where we have the individual targets within the U.S. equity asset class. And then special situation funds, we already have a global REITs. And I think prior we had called, we had mentioned mezzanine debt or a specific type of investment. Instead, we're just calling investment number two or three, which gives the board the latitude to kind of have an open in case an investment is made there. And the first page 19 is at current levels at 1.5, and page 20, if the board goes up to a full 9%, what the ranges would look like. Obviously adding to the special situations and decreasing from the other asset classes. In 22, possible investable instruments that may be considered on we added infrastructure to emerging market debt, REITs, high yield bonds, and TIPS. Again, that's just may be considered. It doesn't have anything to do with a potential investment or not.
When we discuss the various investments and managers, as we just finished doing,
yes,
we're doing it in more of a global sense rather than the individual investments they have.
Yes.
My assumption is that you and Tom receive information about individual investments.
Holdings. Yes.
So, for instance, if we bought into the new General Motors, we would know it.
Yes. That, okay. And also, we should have a good idea if a manager's not adhering to our guidelines.
Right. I guess my concern then is more on your responsibilities from the old policy, and the statement said that the investment consultant also insists in monitoring the existing investments, which I find a great deal of comfort that you do receive the individual investments and know what you're doing. Is there a reason we took it out of this investment policy? Because that was not carried forward on page two. It was moved from page 23 to page two, where it says investment consultant, the concept the investment consultant also assists in monitoring existing investments was removed. Was that a mistake or?
What page are you on, Gordon?
On page two, it was moved from page 23, I think, where we had investment consultant, moved over to page two on the new policy, where it says
right.
Investment managers, investment consultants. That's the only paragraph, I think, that describes your role.
Right.
And one of the things, as I say, that I found very beneficial was the knowing that you received all the individual investments
right.
and knew what was going on. I'd like to see that add back in if we could.
Sure, I don't remember taking it out though, that's strange.
Okay.
But I have the past ones I could compare it to.
It was on page 23 of the May investment policy.
Well, on this 24th, under C, it says the investment consultant assists Sansevier Bohr and staff with the policy recommendations. The investment consultant also assists
oh,
in monitoring the existing
that's
investments
it.
And research.
Yeah, it's in there.
That's it.
Stand
there that's
forward.
It.
And
that it was missed in carrying forward.
Well, it didn't get
I'm
moved.
Sorry,
it was left
what?
On page
24.
24?
Yeah.
Did I miss that?
It was probably just pushed down.
Two,
yeah,
it's under C.
Oh, okay. Yes, I missed it.
And the individual holdings for the entire fund are on the website on a quarterly basis.
Right, but you receive them and Paul also receives them.
We get them every month.
Right.
We get a monthly and staff reconciles that with the custodial record. But on the website, the individual holdings are posted by manager, I believe, so you can look at all the Dodging Rock fixed income, all the Pinnacle fixed income, et cetera.
Good, yeah, I would add, when I do these monthlies, it's from the custodian reports for each individual manager.
Yeah.
And that lists all their holdings also.
Right.
So what you're discussing is a good reminder for me to make sure I read in depth those monthlies.
Because I don't think we look at all the individual investments, and that's not really.
No, you don't, I understand.
But at least two parties, you and our manager.
Right, I understand completely.
Good.
Madam Chair, I'd make a motion to accept the changes to the investment policy as presented.
Second the motion.
We have a motion and a second, additional discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay, the last item under myself for this month is a discussion and direction with the board on kind of what we started a few months ago, exploring and presenting other type of investment options, which included mezz debt, infrastructure, and now long short strategies with research affiliates, and other investment options going forward. Now this is just I think we wanted to circle back and say, you know, does the board continue to have an interest in infrastructure or a long short type of equity strategy that's already been presented, and some other investment options going forward. Now I mentioned, you know, the interest rate issue with fixed income potentially going forward, and you know, potentially one alternative would be, there's a piece I think you may or may not have, yes you do, from Goldman, and generally when I see Goldman Sachs I run to the door, but because it's not just Goldman, it's any brokerage firm under that model. We know the business model is very good for them, but it's generally maybe not so good for their clients. But I thought this was an excellent timely piece on one potential scenario going forward with rates so low, and even if they don't go down but stay where they are, you saw the yield on the Barclays Capital Aggregate at 2.4. We do have somewhat of a yield advantage in Dodge and Cox at 3.9, but you know, looking at a piece of the, just a small piece of the total fixed income, and you know, exploring alternatives, as they say, looking at a more opportunistic fixed income portfolio. Now, that would involve potentially introducing below investment grade type of instruments into an assignment, and I know the board's been wary of that, so this is just a discussion, and you can tell me, no, we're not, we have no interest right away, and we can kill it, or we can proceed with no, which doesn't amount to making a change in someone's assignment or, you know, a new investment, but just a discussion and more education and looking at that area. In my mind, what you could do with PIMCO is potentially expand their mandate to include some other instruments and sectors where they would have the freedom to go to what they deem the most relative value in the marketplace and potentially build a yield advantage over the aggregate and boost the returns. Now, of course, that means taking on a little more risk than their current portfolio also. Generally, when you look to add return, you do so at a higher risk level. But it would also make them have an assignment with more diversification, which would have benefits of lowering risk also. So it's just a discussion on infrastructure. We talked about that as a kind of return stream. Now, as you know, with infrastructure from our presentation, there's a liquidity issue, and it's a longer-term type of investment. although the assets and infrastructure are deemed to be investment grade. So that would deviate from our guidelines. Long short adds a short component. It's something we've never done. It theoretically would give you a more steady type of returns in all type of environments, up and down equity markets, and that would go under a equity type of asset class generally. And then lastly would be other ideas that the board might want to explore. Hedge funds have been mentioned in the past, and we haven't done an education on that yet, although I will schedule to bring someone in just from an education standpoint on hedge funds.
Paul, PIMCO announced last week, I think, that they were going to raise a $1 billion fund to purchase troubled debt or troubled assets from banks. And that may be, rather than going to below investment grade, that may be an alternative if they have a presentation at this point to maybe allocate some money into that area.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to bottom feed knowing PIMCO.
With PIMCO,
and
yeah.
It should be, you know,
somebody's
got to
do it.
We got to look at the returns too.
Right. Yeah, I've talked to PIMCO about coming in and talking about this,
okay.
So I know they'll be more than happy to look at how they either can expand our existing mandate within the investment grade and Bell umbrella, and I guess B, you know, counter with what the pros and cons are going to include below investment grade bonds, which would include emerging market debt, a subset of emerging market debt, because that's split between investment grade and non-investment grade, high yield, and bank loans would be the main components.
Are they bank loans or bank assets that they're buying? Or
Yeah.
I have a concern that when we're talking about moving into, basically this is a different asset class entirely, and we're taking from the asset class we're using for risk prevention and making it a riskier investment. So I think we need to, if we're going to do that, I'm not opposed to doing it.
Right.
But we need to break it out from that asset class and say this is no longer bonds, this is another category, because it's not the same category. Second piece is I think if we're going to do it, then we need to do it in a way that our asset allocation should be with purpose in mind of exceeding our 8% target. We shouldn't be trying to beat 3%, beat 4%.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Then we're wasting our risk points.
Our budget, yeah.
You know, our risk budget. I also think that when we do this, if we're going to go into something, I can see it's hitting the newspaper, junk bonds. And so if we're going to hit something like high yield bonds, then we need to make some provision to make sure we've taken care of that as it is not a junk bond because, or it is a junk bond and we're only risking this much.
Right. Well, those are all good points, because we just met on our capital markets expectations and they haven't been finalized yet, but you can see what the yields on the bond indices have gone, and our return assumption for U.S. bonds looks like it's going to go down from 3.9 to 3.2, and equities will go down 20 bips across the board. So I agree with you. That's a great point. We need to do an asset allocation, and when we do asset allocations, we do break out high yield bonds away from.
Yeah.
So point well taken.
I mean, you can say it's within the same box, but it's really not.
No, you're right. You're right.
Perhaps we also should look at our standards. I think we were talking about, like, in good standing, not, and the length of time we take to say a manager
right.
is not making what they want. When you get into higher risk, I think you need to have a faster evaluation process.
Yeah, and that, agreed. So I think
what do you need from us?
I think what we'll do, if it's all right with the board, we need to finalize our asset class expectations. We'll rerun the asset allocation on the existing portfolio and then look at where that expected return's gonna be. I almost consensus is gonna be below 8%. But again, we have to look at the real return also, because our inflation expectations are at 2.3 or 2.4. I think we should bring PIMCO in as an existing manager and just have them talk to us about broadening their mandate in just the investment grade space, and then beyond the investment grade space, what that would look like and the risk involved in doing that. And then what I need from you on direction is on the two topics we've kind of presented already, infrastructure and long short, just a sense from the board, do we stop or is there interest to move forward or not in those two areas? And then we'll set up, just for an education session, I want to bring in two parties. One, on the hedge fund front, we'll bring in a multi-strategy hedge fund that gives you diversification by being multi-strategy, just as an education standpoint for people to get a better understanding of what hedge funds are and how they should behave and look as part of a portfolio. And then I'd like to bring Bridgewater in to go over a session on the board on kind of their views of the world. They're a very good firm, and kind of they have a kind of a different approach to looking at asset allocation. So that's kind of my thinking. But what I do need is just a quick discussion on infrastructure and long short.
Well, I tell you where I am. I want you to bring opportunities to this board.
Right.
And I want you to research them and bring us good opportunities and be able to answer our questions. And we may not go along with it, but
sure,
you've got to bring it to us.
Yes.
And that's part of your, I think, part of your job portfolio. And it's our call then to decide whether we want it or not. But
sure.
But I want you to
okay,
be creative and innovative and imaginative.
Okay.
I don't think we're done with the infrastructure and long short.
I
think
either.
This whole thing was part of a total education
right,
process. So bring forward
hedge
what
funds,
you just discussed,
but
and then we can
let
wrap
me
it
talk
up.
About maybe
let
other board
me say from my perspective, an hour talking about somebody buying life insurance policies was way too long. Maybe your explanation of it would have been helpful to us, you know, but the sales pitches are starting to get a little long.
That was a request made by the board.
I understand. I understand. I'm just saying, maybe we didn't know what we were buying into when we.
Well, maybe you need to have the education to know not to go in that direction.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is,
I agree with you. I heard that and I said, there's no way I want to invest in that. But maybe you need to spend an hour. Maybe it's an hour worthwhile to tell you.
No, we don't want to go there.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what it is. It's education. And we're going to have a lot more education sessions where we'll get information and we won't make any decision regarding it. We'll decide not to go there.
It's just part of the process. Yeah.
I mean, I know that I've been through the hedge fund training in the past many years ago, and we decided not to go anywhere near it. But that was many years ago. And my problem is that maybe it's just that particular vendor.
I think though.
Oh, three hedge funds just got. I was just reading in the paper or something. They were
trading something.
They were getting investigated for
hedge funds.
Okay.
The bottom line is, I mean, for those of us that went to Cypress this time, as well as other times, you look at the ones the funds that are the most successful, and they're not stuck in the usual. We have a pretty white bread type of investment policy, and we need a little toast on some of those if we want to get the returns that we need to get to pay what we owe into the future. You know, we tend to, again, I'm just repeating what we've talked about, we tend to still be way too cautious.
And I was very impressed with the infrastructure stuff, and I would definitely be interested in, you know, looking at some kind of infrastructure.
We should be diligent. Mm-hmm. But if we need to make a decision, and if we don't have enough education on it, then we need more than an hour.
When you bring it forward, Paul, if you could also bring how we can control risk, assuming there is risk, and what kind of liquidity we're looking at. Is this a commitment that's long-term? Is it something we can change our mind 2 years from now?
Right.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, I think in both of the strategies, we were talking about 25 to 30 million, so we're talking about 2%.
Yeah.
So it's not gonna make us or break us, but it does diversify us, and it does start us moving in those directions. And I think there's no question we need to do whatever we need to move forward on the infrastructure. Interesting on the long short, I was looking for that 130-30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I was pretty impressed with these guys. I don't know if they know what they're doing, but I like the idea of looking at overvalued, shorting the overvalued, and buying the undervalued. That makes sense, especially where we've been in this volatile market.
Yeah. Well,
if they know what they're doing.
Well, there are a lot of other outfits, obviously, too. And
yeah.
130-30 is a completely different animal.
Right.
Yeah.
Than the market neutral type. Yeah.
But I did like their concept. You know, I started there, but I like this concept. Instead of limiting it, you know, you can go.
Yeah. We'll do. I know what to do going forward.
But I think we need to look at both of those strategies and really soon because
you
do need to diversify.
Well, we've done the full-blown KKR.
Yeah.
What I need to do is review the PPM of RBC, right?
And if you think we need to put that out to others, but I've known one of the gentlemen. He's worked with the bank for 15 years.
He gave me the PPM, so it's...
Yeah, handling our investments, and they've done a great job for us. They did fire us 2 months ago. They moved out of banking.
Okay.
But, which was good for us. But, you know, they're a very reputable firm, so. But, if there are others out there, we should talk
Sure.
About. And I'd like the long short. I don't know if there are other people to do that.
Oh, there's hundreds.
Yeah, that makes sense to...
So we'll do another session on long short, too.
On this infrastructure, this is not something you can get out of either. You're in it, you got kind of in it for the duration, aren't you?
It's hard.
Yeah, but we're putting such a small amount in it. I mean,
it won't have
It's not... I mean, if we're to the point where we need that much money, we got bigger issues than getting out of infrastructure.
It would not put the total fund in a illiquid situation, but it does. The money you're exposing to that becomes hard to get out, like you said. That's why you demand a premium, frankly, because of the liquidity lockup. But let me look to see if there's other funds out there that don't have those type of issues.
That might be okay. They would have to pay the premium because of that. So it may be an okay fit for us, depending on what it wants. I wouldn't be necessarily against it. So
right.
I know that going into it.
Yeah, definitely.
So you know what to do?
I think I know what to do.
We've got the answer going forward. Okay, where are we at here? There's no action now. Except that we just discussed. Okay, so that takes us to committee reports. Teleconference.
Paul, did you want me?
Yeah, we did a review of LSV in September. They came the next month and presented to the full board in October, so you have all heard kind of what we went through on our due diligence shortly thereafter. And here's a memo on just our due diligence review. And it's just an information item with, hopefully we will get better communication from them on. Hopefully there won't be stocks like Saturn going forward, but there'll be better communication with our guidelines being revised. And as a manager, we have no major issues with them from an organization or a performance standpoint.
Which one of our investment teams invested in that bank in Iceland where they lost?
Kevin Cox.
Yeah.
Probably lose like $3 or $4 million. Lost a bit. I don't know the dollar amount.
They still hold it though.
It's not in the portfolio anymore, but it's, they still hold it, yeah.
Right.
It's one of those things you can sell as a nice tourist sort of, you know.
Right.
Sure, somebody goes to Iceland and say, hey, I got some stock.
It's frustrating.
And also, there's the attached questionnaire from LSD for your evening reading pleasure. For non-football night. Okay, that takes us to any additional information or anything? Or we move on to the administrator?
Okay, Gordon Ford prompted questions for the actuary and investment consultant to look at the actuarial assumed rate of return, or should we look at the actuarial assumed rate of return again, based on the quantitative easing, too. So the email was forwarded to both Graham Schmidt and Paul Hart, EFI Actuaries, and Paul Hart, FSAS investment consultant. And both consultants came back with, they felt the 8% assumed rate did not need to be reviewed at this point in time. The original 8% was determined just 2 months ago, September 8, 2010, at the retirement board meeting. Board members have a copy of all the emails and so on that went back and forth, and it's up to them to determine whether they want to take any action to re-review the actual assumed rate of return.
Gordon, were you worried that that QE2 is going to cause our that we should lower our assumption rate because of that?
I think the misunderstanding is unfortunate. It isn't often that the government tells you what they're going to do and takes out newspaper articles basically about it. But Bernanke has long said that he intends to issue, well, essentially print paper. And what he intends to do is essentially flood the market so that it takes more dollars to buy things. And he even said that it will cause the stock market to go up. And he wrote that. The new majority chair of the House has written to him, along with other members, expressing concern about inflation. Something that I get to see firsthand with my kids going to college, in which the university is saying there's a 5% increase in fees this semester and an additional 10% next semester. So there is a concern as to whether there's inflation or not. Now, I don't know for sure what's going to happen, but I do recall that not changing the actuarial report, because I never intended to do that, that the consultant had said that one of the strengths we have on our consultant is that they can run scenarios fairly easily at not very high expense. And that given the fact that the position has been laid out there as a possibility, I thought it was prudent to take a look at the possibility of facing inflation and what that would mean. That would require doing a run of a scenario, which they estimated to be $1,000 to $2,000. So I asked you to find out if they were still willing to do that, and to see whether the board felt it was worth spending $1,000 or $2,000 to see what would happen if Bernanke is correct. Paul, I think, indicates he doesn't believe Bernanke is going to be successful in causing inflation.
Well, my stance was, A, that short-term quantitative easing is very good for the financial markets, and we've seen that already. I think that's probably mostly been played out at this point, but, and B, yes, the actions appear to be very inflationary down the road. The question is how far down the road.
And how severe.
Yeah, but no one can argue that. And I think, C, it's bad for the U.S. dollar in the long term also, these types of actions. But that said, when you get the effect of QE2, and we saw that the first stage, March 2009 to April 2010, a huge increase in the markets. The way we look at the expectations for the markets, it's more a reversion to the mean. So when you have these large rises from QET, our actual assumptions go down for the equity asset class. and that's happened recently, as I said, with the 20 basis points chopping off there. As far as inflation, the issue is that we've had 40, 30 years of actions by corporations and individuals that have been leveraging up their balance sheets, and that led to the crisis that happened. And now we're in a period of severe deleveraging, and it's only been a couple of years. And that deleveraging offsets the inflationary actions that the Fed are taking. In fact, the Fed can take those actions because of the severe deleveraging taking place on households and corporate balance sheets. Now, the question becomes a balancing act, right? And that's hard to model, frankly, but I agree, I think. And the way TIPS are priced, the Treasury Inflation Protection Securities versus their counterpart government securities, is it's kind of the next 10 years you expect very low inflation, frankly, of 1.5%, 2%. But it's kind of broken out the next 5 years, it's pretty flat at zero, and then it spikes up a little bit. That's how the financial markets are looking at it. So it's just a lot.
So what I'm saying is, in my mind, there's a possibility of inflation.
I think it's a high probability. The question is only when and.
And the question is, can our actuaries, people model it for 1 or 2,000 and take a chance to see whether it's worthwhile?
I think we misunderstood what you said in your email, so we need to have that conversation with Graham and EFI.
Mm-hmm. But he did, and I specified there that he did say that for $1,000 to $2,000 they could do a modeling of it. And I don't know.
I don't know
if they can or not.
I don't know.
But. The point is that the board would have to make the decision whether it's worth spending money to take a look at that possibility.
Right. I understand.
Now, it's interesting. I'm not sure where you think we're going to end up this fiscal year, but right now we've already booked in more than our assumed rate of return.
Hmm?
Our return so far today is, what, 12?
It's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a chance we will end the year above our 8%.
So hard.
Not good.
I use the worst word in the markets. I hope that's true.
Okay.
But we're only one third of the way into the fiscal year.
Correct.
I'm just concerned that 2 years ago, this board was adamantly believing that we would be in a case of this year, 2010, in a situation of hyperinflation. There's a large and a strong belief in that. We took some actions with many people having that belief in their brain. It was wrong.
Hmm.
You know, we can't guess and speculate. If we run a model, it's going to be the what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically we took some facts based on a 3-year study that they presented. Okay, 2 years ago we were in an economic downturn, and we again reacted. Now we have this action taken by the Fed, and we're on the point of reacting again. And we do that a lot. So what I would like, personally speaking, I don't think it's necessary. We were given a set of information, facts that aren't going to be changing that quickly, in my opinion. I could be wrong next year. But the fact is, I don't feel it's necessary. Based on some of the conversations that I had with some administrators at SACRS this year, they were actually concerned that some people may have, some groups may have lowered their assumption rates too low. So it's like, Where's the balance here? I think we took the appropriate action, and I know some disagree, that of assuming the 8%, and I think that's a fine compromise. You know,
again, I have no problem with the study.
Yeah,
that's not
like I said. I don't know, and it's only $1,000, but $1,000 is $1,000. That's how much this week cost me for furloughs, and that's it counts.
I think what a lot of plans have done on this inflationary question is create these, quote, inflation buckets, which generally include TIPS, can include real estate, infrastructure, and commodities, are general of the investments in there. And frankly, when you look at it, and our clients were advising today, the only thing that might make sense in there is infrastructure and commodities, I think. TIPS is just, they're just priced so poorly to invest in today. But that's kind of how you would react with the thought of protecting your portfolio in an inflationary bucket. But as we just said, it's a huge balancing act, and it's hard.
So well, perhaps the answer is to come back a little later on this issue if we reach inflation.
Yeah, I think it's something we need to monitor and always monitor, but I think right now the balance is not in favor of, in the short term, of inflation. It's definitely out there, though, no question.
You know, we've, over the last few years, Mike Lynch has looked at this, and we collectively as a board have looked at this more than once. We had specific questions of our actuary here just recently to look at this very same issue. They provided some very in-depth analysis. We went back and forth on this issue, and we finally settled once again on the 8%. You know, these are long-term models. We're not chasing short-term rates of return or the discount rate, however you want to describe it. So I think it would be very imprudent at this point to change this midstream, not knowing what the markets are going to do. Yes, we were fortunate ending the fiscal year at over 15%. None of us have a crystal ball. If we did, we would have avoided all the problems that this fund experienced and many other funds experienced during the economic downturn. You know, some of us here on this board have, you know, said, well, let's invest in two-year treasuries. Well, we all know that's not going to get us to anything above 8%. So I think we leave it the way it is, and I'm not interested in spending any type of money when, coming in March, when EFI is going to come back with their report. If this is something that we can add to that at that point, maybe that's something we can do then. But I think we've gone over this ad nauseum over the last few years, and we'll just leave it where it is.
In my opinion, speaking with Graham back in May, he stated to me that he felt that 7% was justified at that time. We've come to an 8% number, and okay, that's the decision of the board, and I'll go along with that. I felt that 7.5 was what he was going to be supporting at this time. He did not. He indicated to me he would go with 7.5 this year and 7 next year. But that's not where he stood when he came to the board. So I felt that that's a problem for me, but that's not a problem for the board. I also feel that, yes, we're ahead of the game so far this year, but Graham's numbers are, as you said, long, long term. They're 20-year, 30-year numbers. And if we were worried about short term, we'd be swinging these numbers every month, and the Board of Supervisors would be going absolutely crazy. I mean, they're not doing too well right now, but, but they couldn't handle what we would be doing to them. And the good news that Graham came up with was a plan to, in his adjustments, not cost the plan sponsor any money, which was a unique idea. I think he could have gone further with it, and I think we could have been at 7.5 and not cost the plan sponsor any money, from my understanding. That said, I don't have a problem with going on another year and seeing where things are at. I do think our focus should be on our earnings and not so much on other things, but when you move those numbers, it makes a difference as to how much we have in earnings. That is, if our target is 8% or if our target is 9%, you don't make that target, the county has to come up with money. If we make that target and we exceed it slightly, the county gets some relief. And I'd like to see the county have more relief. So I'm not worried about increasing the assumption. I'm more concerned about safety for the county and for the system. So I'd rather see it go down. But at this point in time, 8 is fine with me, and I'd like to see it continue for the next year. The money for the study, I think it should be studied. I think it should be studied, however, along with our June actuarial study, which is coming up. I mean, we're just a few months out from the June, 6 months, and at that time, you know, we'll get a new number. It won't come in that in June, it'll come in, you know, they always sit 9 months late, but we're gonna get another number. We'll also be able to have some more information by them as to see what federal inflation is this year, because that's coming up. And unfortunately, they change how they count those beans on a regular basis. Every new administration comes in and says, well, I'm gonna count housing a little more or a little less, I'm gonna count the breadbasket a little more or a little less, we're gonna use Costco, we're gonna use, it's all these little games they play each time. But I think that that it wasn't wrong for the treasurer to bring us this to us, but I think my opinion is that we just leave things the way they are for the time being.
I think 8% is not realistic, but I've said that for several years. I think, with all due respect to Gordon, that running a model because of the Bernanke's action, I mean, why not run a model because of the euro, and why not run a model because of North Korea and South Korea? Mm-hmm. You know, I just think it's too, I think we wait for the report to come back next June and deal with it annually.
You know, you made a really good point. Right now, I mean, this is the way the markets work, obviously. There are events that happen in the world that can make cause changes.
Enormous
changes. Korea, for example, is a good point. So we have no control. We may decide on
there may be some
today,
unique reason
we'll
to do
next
a model, and I'm open to it. But
And you mentioned QE2. In the short term, QE2s have the opposite effect. They're very, very instruments they're buying have gone up over 30 basis points. So it's gone in a total opposite direction of what they were hoping for.
Okay, so to keep us moving forward, do we want to take any action? No action?
No action this time.
Okay, thank you. Discussion and action on the retiree health insurance consultant agreement.
Okay, our agreement with Patrick McTigg, SML INS, formerly BMTI, comes up December 31st, 2010 of this year. We did a survey of retirees who utilize the health insurance, and the board received a copy of that survey and all the comments related to that. The continued deduction of the insurances by SML INS. This is a pretty quick product. They download or upload up to us the figures. It goes right into the payroll, and staff has very minimal impact. Minimal impact on staff time or cost. So this situation works very well. So continue that for 2011. Also to approve a one-year extension of the contract agreement for professional services with SML INS, formerly BMTI, and also to direct staff to work with RESCO, Retired Employees of Stanislaus County, and looking at and potentially implementing changes in the current administration and bring that back in June for calendar year 2012.
I move for approval.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
This is the item that the RESCO endorsed also, right? They sent us a... Just for the record, you show that.
She concurs.
Darren, do you have a comment?
Well, yeah, just one comment. In looking over this, you know, only 38% responded.
That's good for a survey.
That's excellent.
You don't have a problem, you don't complain.
Survey people.
As many people with all the issues, and this has been an item, a hot button item for a number of years, I was hoping for a little bit more, a higher percentage. But...
I think you got a response. The people who don't respond are saying it's not a problem.
No,
I don't care.
They need to respond. That's the only way we're going to come together in a partnership and move things forward. So, and I'm particularly interested in item 3 on the recommendation. So beyond that, I'll support it.
Their employees don't respond to surveys, and it applies to.
I have one concern that's allied to this, but not part of. I know that there was some discussion in the committee that earlier today, it was at least on the agenda materials, that we're not going to be having a benefits committee from this board. And this is basically being pushed off to staff as a staff task. And that's fine that staff does it, but I am concerned that, this board has moved away from dealing with benefits issues. And it's really the purpose of this board to provide benefits. So I know some of those benefits are kind of static, like our main benefit level. But this is a benefit that we're talking about here that we're providing with no cost, with just administrative involvement, and to that extent, a very small amount. And the administrative costs from SML is paid for by the people using the service. But I would like us to continue having that committee. Although it may not be a standing committee, just maybe an ad hoc committee, I would hope we can continue to have that on an as-needed basis for things like this.
I think that's coming up on the December 8th meeting.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just mentioning it in conjunction with this this kind of issue.
Okay.
Call for the question.
Additional comments? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved.
I'll make a motion to move into closed session.
Thank you. Go.
Thank you.
I thought about that about the original filing.
Okay, in closed session, the retirement board approved Bernice Sumter for service-connected disability retirement to be effective February 16, 2010. No action was taken on items 9A or 9B.
And then on 9C, report. The plaintiffs in the O'Neill versus Stancera matter have filed a notice of appeal on that matter.
Okay. With that takes us to members' forum. I'll start with Ron.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Thank you, Grant.
I'll second that. And pass.
Pass.
We had a wonderful training at Secker's. I note that Stancera came out very well in the returns. I was amazed how well it came out, surprisingly. Doesn't mean we can't do it better, and I would hope that we can learn from what other people are doing. That's some movement we can do. Also, I want to mention that the looking at some of the studies, there was a study done on the Stanford study, and I think we just got that in the email. Well, there's a follow-up done on San Diego, and that study in San Diego basically contradicted the information in the Stanford study and explained more of how we're doing things right. But we can come back to that at a later time. Thank you.
Nothing.
I have nothing today.
Here.
Just a few things. To follow up on what you just said about the studies, I think one of the things that keeps occurring in those studies is the variation between what seems to be prevalent on the East Coast versus our laws here in California. You have a number of systems which it factors into their conclusions in both of the studies. There was a Stanford study and one out of Chicago, I believe, where state systems are allowed to not pay their ongoing annual contributions. So you have this building of debt that's accrued. We don't have that here. The other thing that always gets mentioned in the report is the OPEB liabilities, which if you total up the OPEB liabilities, they're actually a lot more than the actual UAAL for the pension obligations. I know in California in particular, PERS has a huge OPEB unfunded liability.
I think that Stanford study has OPEB in it.
But it doesn't clarify, and that's the issue. Neither study clarifies, and I think that's where the confusion comes in. Back to my bullet points. I just want to say thank you to my fellow safety members for their continued support. Probably to the chagrin and the dismay of some, I was reelected unopposed for another 3-year term, so those of you that were hoping me to depart, sorry. I'm still here. I'm back, as they would say.
How close was it?
Oh, yeah.
You ran unopposed?
Ran unopposed. I want to say thank you very much to my fellow peers.
Another tough one.
Number two, I would ask the administrator to put together a synopsis of what has occurred during my tenure, going back to April of 2003, as to what Stan Serra has done in cooperation and partnership with the plan sponsor. I was very disappointed. I want to thank Supervisor DeMartini for on at the spur of the moment trying to add some clarification. Although I think if you were given a little more time and leeway, you could have provided a little more insight to the public and to the viewing audience. But on November the 2nd, I was a little disappointed that, again, we were made to look like the bad guys. And I think there was not enough information provided as to exactly what we have done. And I think when you add it up, just in my tenure, it's about $200 million.
If you want to go back to my tenure, it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in that period of time, it's a substantial amount of money that this system, actions that this board has taken to A, shore up the liabilities of this system, and B, do what's in the best interest of an ongoing partnership with the plan sponsor. And I'm very, like I said, I can't emphasize enough, I was disappointed that that was not, that the tone of the dialogue was not more of a cooperative partnership, it was more of an adversarial tone. And that was disappointing. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Thank you.
A little tricky with that.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. And SACRS was a great conference, some really good speakers. And also, like both of them talked about, the Stanford study. And I think that's kind of a misnomer, calling it the Stanford study.
In class
and they Stanford. And they actually brought that to life while we were there.
Good point.
Happy Thanksgiving and congratulations to Darren, another 3-year term. Happy holidays.
And happy holidays to everyone. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. 5 o'clock.